Good evening. Happy Friday. You're listening to Faith Ignited. I'm your host, Nancy Burns, and I'd like to spend the next 45 minutes to an hour with you, if you don't mind. I've missed you guys. How was your week? Did we do all the tasks that we were supposed to do? I had a good week. I had a relaxing week. And sometimes you just have to listen to your body. And that's what I'm doing. And I hope you guys are doing that with me tonight. Hope you're in your comfy, cozy clothes. Hope you're in your pajama jams. And that you are melting into whatever you're sitting or laying on. You just feel your body melting into your chair, your bed, your car. If you're listening to this in your car, please be advised that I do not recommend this podcast while operating a motor vehicle. Thank you. Oh boy, guys. So I have a few things I want to talk about before we get started on our story for tonight, which I think you guys are actually going to really, really enjoy the story. It's about a celebrity, and it's about his story, which I have not read yet, as you guys know, or if you're new here, welcome. It's nice to finally meet you. If you are returning back to this show, thank you for choosing to come back. So, remember last week when I told you guys about the Portuguese kids having their premiere on, first time on RTP, which is a Portuguese huge, like an NBC or an ABC for us here in the States. And they wrote, produced, and did a bunch of things with this cast and crew of this hilarious story. Stories that you and I can relate to very, very easily, and stories that people wanted to definitely watch, because I think we broke the internet, folks. We broke the internet. RTP's app went down and we could not watch. So to all of us who have seen it later than the first time it was aired, I still was happy that I got to see it and watch it and laugh and enjoy it. And so we want to congratulate Portuguese kids with their new endeavor, Portuguese Problems. We want to send them good vibes always, and everybody in our community. Not just the Portuguese kids, but everyday Joes and Joans and Marias out there. Everyday folks. You guys are doing amazing. And you know what? You're doing the best that you can. That's what you do. Because that's all you have to give, is what you can give. So, I also want to talk to you guys about, and also their second episode is coming out, dropping on this Monday, I believe. Check your local listings or check the app for the time. It should be 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 9 p.m. Eastern, but I'm not sure if that's still right. Just check the website or their Facebook. And so all of us who are trying to do something in the community, congratulations. And those of us that aren't doing it in the community, that just listen or just support or just look from afar and support, we appreciate that too. You know, sitting here talking to a microphone, you would think would be really, you know, lonely being out here alone by myself right now talking to you guys, but I feel each and every one of you. I so feel each and every one of you that have told me that you've tuned in. Thank you. Thank you to Canada. Thank you to America. Thank you to Portugal. Thank you to wherever you listened to Faith Ignited. Now I am on Amazon Music, you guys. You can find this podcast wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. So that being said, my favorite podcast right now is My Girl, my pretty Miss Sylvia Costa, who is the host of her show called the New Friends Podcast. If you guys have not checked out her latest interview, which Sylvia has a very sort of engaging way that she conducts her interviews, and she really draws in the person that she's interviewing. And so I very much enjoyed the last episode that she puts out. She puts out bi-weekly podcasts on PAMA and her YouTube, and she has all the information on her social media, Sylvia Manuela Costa, or New Friends Podcast on PAMA Media. But she's had that was a great, great interview. I enjoyed it very much. And I suggest you guys go watch and hear Sandra's story, how she started to sing and sort of how things, traditions have changed throughout the years. All of that being said, usually I speak for 7 or 8 minutes. It's been my average. With that being said, I think it's time to light our candle, everybody. Light that candle. Oh, it smells so good, this candle. Oh. All right, guys, thank you for listening to Faith Ignited. We're going to get into our story today. Today is a story of, I never was really into the whole friends craze. I was kind of being a young mom when that was all going out. So I didn't really get into friends, but I would see clips here and there. It's about a celebrity that was on that show. And if you guys know Matthew Perry played Chandler? I think it was Chandler. Matthew Perry played Chandler. And so he's been very vocal about his addiction to drugs, painkillers specifically. But I heard something, and I posted it on my Instagram, which you guys can follow me at Faith Ignited Podcast on Instagram. But Girls Gone Bible was talking about how you separate yourself from God when you're living in addiction. It's almost like you have to separate yourself from God. Because as you're in that addiction, you're facing things that you are afraid to face, traumatized to face. So this story is by, I took it from the website mbird.com, and it's called Grace in Practice. Maybe you were aware of how bad things had gotten for dear Matthew Perry, aka Chandler Bing on Friends. Not me, in the memoir that's been making headlines these past couple of weeks, which is called Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. Perry derails a harrowing history of addiction, 14 trips to rehab, 60 some odd detoxes, 15 stomach surgeries, and the kind that make you marvel that he's still alive. It's transfixing. And a tragic tale. And who knows if it's over? One can only pray. About midway through, Perry recounts what he considers his bottoms. And well, it left me gasping. Unsure if it's made more poignant or less by the fact that it's impossible to read without Chandler's iconic sarcasm during the narration. The context is that Matthew couldn't sleep because of a painful detox, and it took 8 Xanax, and about that, that was likely to kill him if he didn't get a dose of anti-seizure medication immediately. At the outset of the passage, he's waiting for an assistant to arrive with those pills in tow. This was a new bottom. I didn't think you could get any lower than my previous bottom, but I had managed to do it, Perry writes. And all of this in front of my father, who was obviously terrified. The cunning, baffling, powerful nature of addiction had gotten me one more time. The front door wasn't still opening. This was serious trouble. I was a desperate man. The drugs were in full flow, and the drinking too. Things were so bad, I couldn't even cry. To cry might have signaled that there was at least somewhere abouts there, but nothing natural about any of this. So a bottom, the lowest point of my life. This is a classic moment for an addict, a moment after which one seeks lasting help. But hey, what's this now? As I sat there looking into the kitchen, I noticed a crinkle in the atmosphere. Perhaps someone, not at their bottom, might have waved it away as nothing. But to me, it was so compelling that I could not look away. It resembled a kind of little wave in the air. I had never seen anything like it before in my life. It was real, true, tangible, and concrete. Is this what you see at the end? Was I dying? And then, excuse me, I frantically began to pray with the desperation of a drowning man. The last time I'd prayed, right before I'd gotten friends, I'd managed only to strike a Faustian bargain with a god who had simply drawn a long breath and bided his time. Here I was, more than a decade later, chancing my praying once again. God, please help me. God, please help me, I whispered. Show me, God, that you are here. God, please help me, Perry said. As I prayed, the little wave in the air transformed into a small golden light. As I kneeled, the light slowly began to get bigger and bigger until it was so big that it encompassed the entire room. It was like I was standing on the sun. I had stepped on the surface of the sun. What was going to happen? And why was I starting to feel better? And why was I not terrified? The light engendered a feeling more perfect than the most perfect quality of drugs I had ever taken. Feeling euphoric now, I did get scared and I tried to shake it off, but there was no shaking this off. It was way, way, way bigger than me. My only choice was to surrender to it, which was not hard because it felt so good. The euphoria had begun at the top of my head, and slowly seeped down throughout my entire body. I must have sat there for 5, 6, 7 minutes, filled with it. My blood hadn't been replaced with warm honey. I was warm honey, and for the first time in my life, I was in the presence of love and acceptance, and filled with an overwhelming feeling that everything was going to be okay. I knew now that my prayer had been answered. I was in the presence of God. Bill Wilson, who created AA, was also saved by a lightning bolt through the window, where he felt he was meeting God. After about 7 minutes, insert 7 minutes in heaven joke here, he writes, the light began to dim. The euphoria died down. God had done his work and was off helping someone else now. I started to cry. I mean, I really, really started to cry. That shoulder shaking kind of uncontrollable weeping. I wasn't crying because I was sad. I was crying because for the first time in my life, I felt okay. I felt safe, and I felt taken care of. Decades of struggling with God and wrestling with life and sadness, all was being washed away like a river of pain gone into oblivion. I had been in the presence of God. I was certain of it. And this time, I had prayed for the right thing. Help. Eventually, the weeping subsided, but everything was different now. I could see color differently. Angles were different. They were in a different magnitude. The walls were stronger. The ceilings were higher. The trees tapping on the windows, more perfect than ever. Their roots connected via the soil to the plant and back into me. One great connection created by an ever-loving God and beyond a sky which had before been theoretically infinite, was now unknowably endless. I was connected to the universe in a way that I had never been. Even the plants in my house, which I had never even noticed before, seemed in sharp focus, more lovely than it was possible to me, more perfect, more alive. I stayed sober for 2 years, based solely on that moment. God had shown me a sliver of what life could be. He had saved me that day, and for all days, no matter what, he had turned me into a seeker, not only of sobriety and truth, but also of him. Nowadays, when a particular darkness hits me, I find myself wondering if it was just Xanax insanity, a continuation of the snake I had been sure was about to show up. I find myself wondering if it was just Xanax insanity, a continuation of the snake I had been sure was about to show up. The drug can cause what the National Institute of Health describe as reversible, brief, psychotic episodes. But quickly I return to the truth of the golden light. When I am sober, I can still see it and remember what it did for me. Some might write it off as a near-death experience, but I was there, and it was God. And when I am connected, God shows me that it was real. Little hints, like when the sunlight hits the ocean, my favorite, right before sunset. That sun hits the ocean right there. And it turns into a beautiful golden color. Or the reflection of sunlight on a green leaf of a tree. Or when I see the light return to someone's eyes when they come out of the darkness into sobriety. Yes. My God, can we speak on that? Yes. 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 Amen. Amen. That was a powerful statement. As you do see the light come back in people's eyes, I know this from personal experience. The light comes back into their eyes. And the chains fall. Anyway, back to the story. And when I feel it, when I help someone get sober, the way it hits my heart when they say thank you, because they don't know yet that I should really be thanking them. Well, thank you, Matthew, for relaying those minutes of endless sunlight to us. And the prayer that preceded them, to take guts to wrangle warm honey into words, to be brave and brave the risk of embarrassment or triteness, and the voice of the prosecutor within, the persecutor within, save the prosecutor for your legal fees, which you will need if you continue to not have a sober life. So the interviewer goes on to say, it takes guts to say that. And you can't contrive the authenticity of someone with nothing left to lose. A strange blessing, to be sure, but a supremely hopeful one. What Matthew describes doesn't sound to these ears like an epiphany or a breakthrough, nor does it sound like a God concept being expanded or recalibrated. Some fresh idea being taken on board. No. It sounds like an emotional encounter with the God of the universe. A God who exudes pure grace towards a man consumed by self-destruction. All was being washed away like a river of pain gone into an oblivion. Praise the Lord. By his own account, this experience thrust Matthew deeper into reality rather than away from it, if not healing him fully or dispelling the uncertainty of what comes next, then certainly pointing toward that possibility. His moment in the sun engendered a contagious sort of gratitude and an eagerness to serve fellow sufferers, which is to say, despite the hellish days or weeks, months or years, maybe someone was there for the guy after all. Wow. That was a very good story. I thought it was going to be more of Matthew Perry's account, but that's okay. We're gonna end strong with a little short story here, and then I'm gonna call it a night because I have to get ready for a celebration. Let me get your snack. This is intermission. Go take a snack break, go take a pee break. I'll wait right here. I'll get something to drink, which I'm gonna take a sip of my A&W root beer, diet root beer, not sponsored. But A&W, if you're looking for a sponsor, looking for something to sponsor, sure you could work something out. Oh man, guys, that was actually a really good story. It wasn't too in your face sort of religion. It was more, and that's the purpose of this podcast, you guys, is to spread the word, to serve others. Once I figured that out, that we're here to serve, it changed my outlook on everything. And once God decided to keep me on this earth as a drunk, it shocked the hell out of me, literally. Let's pull up our next story and end this episode of Faith Ignited. Super duper strong, guys. Alright guys, this is a quick little story. Hypnotic heat shimmered above the pavement of Highway 21 as it wound through a remote and rugged stretch of the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina. On this sweltering afternoon, July 1996, Steve Smith knew he ought to pull off and rest. Driving alone, he was still 40 minutes from his home in Mouth of Wilson, a tiny hamlet just over the Virginia border. The temperature outside was well over 100 degrees, and he struggled to stay awake behind the wheel. He'd been on the road only a couple of hours since saying goodbye to friends after lunch in Pinehurst, 100 miles to the south. He had every reason to be tired. The group of men had risen early to play 18 holes of golf while the morning air was still cold. They played the day before too. Summer was playtime for Steve, and it made him the most happiest. The rest of the year, he was employed as the athletic director and the basketball coach at Oak Hill Academy, a Baptist prep school nestled in the mountains. The enrollment was small, just 150 kids, but the standards were rigorous for students and faculty. Above all, his passion for basketball and his commitment to the excellence drove him to work hard on his job, and it paid off. Over the years, 20 of his boys had gone on to play in the NBA, while during these months he conducted camps for youth from all over the region. These still left ample time for you to enjoy one of educators' biggest perks, which is summers off. It was around 3 p.m. when Steve's 1994 Silver Jeep Cherokee climbed a steep grade just south of Roaring Gap. The white hot sun cast a deep shadow in the thick forest of the oak, hickory, red maple, and dogwood trees. At the hill's summit lay a scenic overlook he'd driven past hundreds of times, a place tourists often stopped to snap photos of the sweeping landscapes below. That day, he briefly considered pulling over for a quick nap before the home stretch. The thought of trying to rest in a blazing hot car with the comfort of his air-conditioned home less than an hour away persuaded him to press on. "I can drive all night with no problem, but I always get sleepy in the after hours," he said. "That day, I remember being extra tired. I told myself I should stop, but I didn't, and all I could think about was getting home." He began the descent down the hill, rising to his left and falling steeply on the passenger side to the narrow valley below. 9/10 of a mile past the summit, Steve fell asleep just as the road curved sharply to his right. The Jeep crossed over the oncoming lane and rode up a steep embankment, and then it rolled sideways back down and eventually came to a stop upside down in the middle of the road. Steve woke up as soon as the vehicle hit the pavement, startled to the sounds of breaking glass and breaking metal. It happened so fast for him to react or even think. Dazed, he simply hung on and waited for the world to stop spinning. Once the Jeep came to a rest, he unhitched his seatbelt and set about trying to open the driver's side door. I banged my head pretty good and was totally out of it, he recalled. All I knew was that I had to get that door open to get out. It didn't sink in, but the roof had collapsed, so there was no way that that door was going to open. Just then, he heard a voice speaking to him from the rear of his vehicle. He turned and saw a woman down on all fours on the pavement, looking at him through the shattered back window. Her face wore a concerned but not panicked expression. She told him matter-of-factly to come toward her. Saying it was the only way out of the wreckage. She was an average-looking woman, about 40 years old, with dark shoulder-length hair. She just calmly told me that I had to get out that way, that it was the only way out. Without any hesitation, that's exactly what I did. He squeezed to the space between the seat tops, hanging above his head, and the crushed ceiling now below him, the whole time moving toward the woman's face, still framed in the rear window. Arriving at the back, ready to climb out onto a sizzling pavement floor, he reached for his golf clubs. I wasn't thinking very clearly, but I'm a golfer, so right then it seemed pretty important to take my clubs with me and my duffel bag with my stuff inside. The woman told me, "Leave them," she said. "Your car looks like it might be on fire. You need to get out." Suddenly, he could smell smoke. He abandoned the clubs and the luggage and crawled out the rest of the way, and he stood unsteadily and saw that the top of his Jeep was engulfed in smoke. He turned toward the spot where she'd been kneeling to thank her and to suggest that they could get a safe distance away. And he spun around, looking every direction. His rescuer had vanished like a heat mirage. He was the only person present. The only car on the road was his. If you could see the countryside along the stretch, you'd know what I mean when I say there is no way she just walked out of the woods. It's just too remote. She was there 1 minute, as solid as anybody, and then 1 minute, it took the time for me to crawl the rest of the way and out to stand up. She was gone. Remembering the smoke and that he was standing in the middle of the highway, Steve hustled away from the wreckage. As he turned, She'll look back at the scene. A thunderous explosion shook the air. The Jeep burst into flames. He staggered back, scanning again for that woman who had suddenly appeared and had just suddenly vanished. Without her, he'd be trapped inside, struggling to open a jammed shut door, and no doubt he would have been engulfed in flames. "I'm sure I was in shock," he said. "I knew that if I hadn't been there, been for the woman telling me to crawl out the back, that I would have died in that fire." Before long, a pair of cars come up to the accident and stopped. Steve asked them, "Hey, have you seen this woman?" No. No one had seen her. Somebody called 911, and soon thereafter, state troopers arrived along with the ambulance. Steve suffered 2 fractured vertebrae, the C3, the C4, and opposite sides of the spinal cord, in what usually is a debilitating injury. Upon seeing the x-rays, his family doctor said, "You have a broken neck. It's a miracle you're not paralyzed." Yet after 10 weeks in a brace, Steve would walk away from his brush with death, experience only little numbness to his left arm. Years earlier, I'd been called to give a message at the school chapel, he recalled. The topic was angels and how they're here to protect and help us. Some of the kids asked me whether I really believe angels exist. And I turned to that child and said yes, even though I had never seen one. Now I don't have to just believe it. I actually know it. I'm only telling what happened the day on the mountain. And I'm sure some people might have their own logical explanation. But as for me, I'm absolutely convinced that there are angels protecting us. I probably wouldn't be here today if I hadn't had one protecting me. Wow. That is crazy. Crazy, crazy, guys. Did you guys enjoy that short story? I was like into that story for a minute. I was really into it. I hope that you guys are still with me and listened to those 2 incredible stories of staying in your purpose and trying to serve, be in the business of serving others. I think that's so beautiful, and such a beautiful takeaway from both of those stories is that we all know, at least most of us know, that we have angels all around us. I feel them all the time. I see the signs all the time because we're looking for them now. Now, like Matthew said, we start to see leaves look different, flowers look different, trees look different. It's a beautiful sense of freedom. But I am coming to the end of my podcast, you guys. It's been 49 minutes, and I am happy that we got those stories in tonight because I really enjoyed narrating those for you. And I hope that you enjoyed that too. I hope that I was able to get you in a comfy place, or if you're not in a comfy place, just get in the right state of mind. Clear your head, clear your thoughts, hit the reset button, start over. Today's a new day. Tomorrow's a new day. The next day after that is a new day. Free will. Choices. Choices, choices. I choose you guys. I choose my Faith Ignited listeners. I thank you for riding this one out with me, with the two stories. I think that for me it went by fast. I don't know about for you guys, but I hope that it was engaging enough that you were able to enjoy the stories of miracles, hope, spiritual journey, spiritual healing, spiritual growth, faith ignited. Very important to me to use every platform that I have to tell people the good news. God bless you. Have a beautiful rest of your weekend. It's the start of your weekend. What are you guys going to do? What are the plans for the weekend? We're not sure yet, but I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great rest of your evening, morning, or night. Beijinhos.